creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another goddamn horror podcast. I am one of your hosts. I'm Ryan Danley, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. I don't know what's going on in Portland. Sunny and shit. I don't know. Jonas, what's going on in Brooklyn?
About the same, actually. It's unseasonably nice out today.
It's unseasonably nice here. This is fantastic.
It's the first day of spring. That means we're fucked next week. How unseasonable is it?
It's like damn near summer.
Yeah,
like,
do you know it's like, the first
it was
day
like
of spring
hot yesterday?
It's the first day of spring on the 19th because it was a leap year. It's usually the 20th or the 21st.
Whoa.
I learned that today from an 8-year-old.
Really?
Yeah.
Remember when you were 8 and you cared about shit? You know what I mean? It's like
no, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're like,
the
oh my god, that's
beating those memories out of me.
That's interesting. And now they say something to me like you know, oh, it's leap year and spring and all that. I'm like, huh. Uh-huh, you know what I mean?
Like, dude, I was so disenchanted when I heard it was a leap year.
I was
just
so,
like,
when the sky got all weird, the kids told me that it was fires from Canada, and I was like, that doesn't sound right, and it was.
Of course
it was very right.
I wouldn't argue about a kid with that. Anyways, let's quit the we usually are banter
filled.
This is ridiculous. If you listen to a lot of us, we usually banter at the beginning just to get some blood in the room. But we have very special guests.
I'm so fucking excited about this. I've been watching their films for a while now, and I went and met them at the Fangoria signing and. So it's Wonder Wheels Productions. They've done The Deeper You Dig, Hellbender, and more recently, Where the Devil Roams on Tubi. So you should watch it. From New York State, Toby Poser and John Adams, the DIY Dynasty.
What's up, Mighty Rock and Rollers?
Yeah, I'm so excited. First of all, what
and
you're
I think
all
it's
about.
It's not a dynasty, it's a dynasty.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Much better. Yeah.
Just let's be clear here.
Yeah.
I love that. For sure. So you're based out of the Catskills, and what really drew us to you, I think, and I think most of the horror community is you're a family does everything involved in making the movie or the movies. And so basically, how does that start? Well, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for being here. It's such a fucking pleasure. And but yeah, how do you become the DIY dynasty?
Hey, you guys, thanks for having us on. This is already really fucking fun. How do we become the dynasty? You know what? We've been doing the nasties since 2010. I was going to say with our kids, but that sounds weird.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But Zelda was 6 and Luke was 11 when we just decided to take off for a year and try our hand at making a film. And we fell in love fast.
We did. You know, I think like it's funny that we're saying dynasty because we made 4 dramas before we started Dying Nasty. Mm-hmm. And the first movie that we made that was a Dying Nasty film was a little thing. It was a little test run called The Hatred. And yeah. Toby was writing a script actually at the time. And Zelda said, hey, let's make a movie where I kill a bunch of like guys. You know, and she was how
I think 12.
She was like 12 years old. And I was like, what, really? You wanted like, just like what? Like just kill for what reason? She's like, I don't know. Let's just come up with a reason why I need to kill like as many guys as possible. And I was like, great.
Bunch of dudes.
Sure. Exactly. And so we wrote a script where a bunch of guys died nasty. And
it's so awesome.
So
it was so awesome. And a festival called Horror Hound accepted our movie and were so generous to us. And suddenly we met the horror community through Horror Hound, and everything changed because making movies was always fun, but not that fun.
Sure.
Right. Once we made horror, it was like the rocket ship blasted off.
Well, I mean, I think that the horror community is looking for what you're doing, because I think that everybody who's a horror fan wants to be at home just making horror movies. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, like, that's like kind of part of the really deal. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, oh, we should do that. And we all have these ideas. And so when we see it actually done and done incredibly well, like, it's just kind of fun to watch and to be part of. And it's just like, you know, and so like, I can understand that, like, a drama community, there's probably a lot of people who like independent dramas and stuff like that, I'm sure, but there's nothing like a lot of people who are independent horror fans. You know, I mean, we like, I mean, particularly us three here, we represent sort of a part of a world that is like, A, on a great comeuppance currently, and like, B, like really some of the best media being made right now. And a great example is like what you you know, that DIY attitude. I mean, I grew up a punk rocker and hip hop and all this stuff, and watched a lot of people come up on their own accord, and seeing people do that like yourselves with really great horror, it just all works together. It just makes sense. And I just think it speaks to a mentality. So I'm really glad you found that, you know?
You know what? It's funny, because that first film we shot in 2010 called Rumble Strips was meant to be a really pretty brutal, like Western. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't know how to quite do that genre, the Western part. And then we actually started shooting it. And it was a funny story, because we were in an RV taking off for a year. And John turns to me while we're driving. He's like, Tobe, he's like, I don't know if I want to kill the kids. And I was like, I don't want to kill the kids either. We just weren't ready. But the impetus for our film, I mean, our initial instincts were towards horror. We just kind of weren't ready to sort of shoot it. And we kind of sort of earned our place and time, and we did. And when we started to, for me, it was with The Deeper You Dig, really. I was like, this felt like falling in love. It really did. It felt like we finally kind of found our mate. Cinematic.
That's so rad. And it kind of, like, I've always thought that horror is the most generous of genres. It can encapsulate any other genre. So if you have an idea that's not quite horror, it's kind of easy to make something horror, like, and it's just kind of more exciting, honestly. And I think where I fell in love with indie horror specifically was I'd watched a lot of it, but when I saw Your Next, it felt like everybody was having fun making that movie. And you could feel it off the screen, even though it was brutal and there's nothing really fun or friendshipy about it. But like, you could tell that there was like, I mean, there are other directors acting in it and stuff. And it was just, I was like, oh, this is what it means to like feel that energy off it. And that's exactly what I get from your films.
That's a huge compliment. Yeah. That's really nice.
I mean,
so like, go ahead.
I think that I think you can see the drama angle in your movies too. And I think that's what adds it like a little extra yeah. Because both with Hellbender and The Deeper You Dig, like, both of them have like a sort of like a human dramatic plot as the driving force. And then you have like the horror angle on it. And I think that's what makes it so compelling. And like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that it's like a really great play, because it gives it that gravity. And that's, you know, like, that's what's giving it that push and that good momentum moving forward. And it becomes, you genuinely care about the people, like, in the, like, I'm not just like a evil demon who's like eating people. Like, I'm a human-ish and I have like, you know, a family and I'm doing things and I'm in a band and I'm in a, you know, I mean, like, I, you know, I'm doing like people stuff and I'm
a demon with a life, guys. God.
Yeah, exactly. but really though, but it's like, you know, I'm a writer myself, and like just giving it that story, and you know, I mean, there's like Dawn of the Dead, which is a movie that I love to death, but like you kind of don't, I mean, even with as good as that movie is, you don't care about it, but then the people, but then if you watch like a Train to Busan, they did a really good job of making you care about the people, and when they die, it matters, and when there's things that happen, that matters, and like, you know, like when when she's swimming in the pool with her friends, like you want her to be having a good life. You know what I mean? Like, you genuinely want her to be like having this life, and you worry for her that she's like, that it's not going to work out. You know what I mean? And I think that that's, to be able to find that in a movie and to get that emotion in there has been a really fantastic, you know, job from any movie, let alone independent movies built from the ground up like yours.
Well, that's incredibly cool to say. And that's one thing that we definitely noticed with Hellbender. Like, so after we made The Deeper You Dig, one of the comments that we got that we kept hearing was like, oh, I really love the chemistry between the mother and the daughter. I would have loved to have seen that developed a little more. And we were like, hey, we can do that. So that's what Hellbender was like a drama about a mother and a daughter. Exactly the time, you know, it was basically a documentary. Obviously, Toby and Zelda don't rip people to shreds and eat them, you know, but it was
that's
like,
too bad. It's too bad.
Yeah, it is. Bad. I mean, sometimes, but it was like, it's a story about that part of our life that we were watching Zelda, you know, grow up, deal with all these issues. We were dealing with soccer moms, you know, like, it was like, and it's so fun to take that part of life and then just cover it in blood. And then you have a horror movie. And that is, to us, what we love about horror movies is watching dramas covered in blood, because there seems to be something a little more artistic to it. Do you know? It's like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously dramas can be very artistic, but we find horror movies, like the cinematography's taking more chances. The metaphors get to take more chances. You get to even talk about things that may be a little off color, or like, oh, that you wouldn't want to talk about that in a regular straight up drama. Mm-hmm. But horror allows you cover it in blood, and it just confuses the issue enough that we can all talk about things that are really fun.
It's like the universal rose colored glasses that you can put any kind of a subject or any kind of a film underneath, you know? And yeah. Like, one thing I wanted to bring up is that one thing I love about what you guys do, and this is something also with independent horror, you kind of sometimes have independent horror where they go the easy route. And I'm not saying it is a bad thing, because it's not necessarily a bad thing, but sometimes independent horror goes the easy route. It's in like, I'm going to make this movie with the amount of money that I have, and I'm just going to do what I can with it. And like, you know, it's just, it like, maybe the story is lacking, or maybe like the character development is lacking or something like that. With your movies, they're unapologetically your movies. Like, and I mean that in the sense that, like, if it's going to be weird, it's going to be fucking weird. And that's okay, and that's good, and that's fun, and we like that. And like, you guys are, because of how DIY you are, I think that there would be, you know, maybe the tendency to try to like cut corners here and there to do this and that, or like make the money stretch or whatever it is, but none of your movies seem like that at all. Your movies seem like you guys put everything into it, which is like, it all comes out on screen. Which I think is something that horror fans really love. Like, when they sit down and they see that, you know, especially because it's a family thing, you can really tell that there's like, there truly is a love for the genre behind everything that you guys make.
That is music to our ears.
It really is, because it's so, we reshoot so much stuff. Like, so when you say something like that, it means that those reshoots were worth it. You know, because we'll come home, maybe even everybody acted well, but the lighting sucks. Like something, like the other day we shot something and the lighting was just like, it was just too blown out, you know, and it kind of ruined the mood. The acting was fine. The setup was fine, but the light was bad. And it's, that's really nice that you say that, because that means people see things that we're trying to do correctly, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. The best thing about indie horror, I think, or indie movies in general, is the limitation of budget forces them to write around or direct around in different ways, in unique ways. And that's always, I think, my favorite kind of movies, is when the story is told differently than, you know, oh, we can afford to show you exactly what happens. But that's not fun, really. You know, yeah. I like to see the weird metaphors and like the odd, like, or Ryan's favorite part of 824 when they eat pie for 20 minutes. Like,
oh my God.
Like weird stuff.
Yeah. I love, everybody's always like, oh my God, this is so, and I'm like, no, I'm laughing my ass off that she's still eating this pie. Just cause it's just like, I just picture the choice to make it. No, just keep going on the pie. Just keep eating the pie. And it's just like, I'm just like, oh, it's brilliant. Like, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I'm, like, what create, so what? Yeah, what creator of art is like, hey, I know what's going to happen in this weird ghost movie is that we're going to just have you eat pie to show you're upset for 10, 15 minutes. Cool. Can we just all just eat this pie? And I don't know. I just love that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Well,
but,
that cake, I promise.
I love that stuff too. I'm always a fan of too much eating.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate the, like, I'm one of those people. I know that there's other people like this. I hate the sound of eating. Oh, but I love it in a horror movie where people sit there and they eat and I can hear the fork hitting the plate. Drives me crazy. And fucking fork hitting their teeth. And then being months. So anytime anybody wants to make a movie with too much eating, I'm sold. That's hard.
That's awesome. That's just called my biography. It's called it's called chicken wings. It's
too much sauce.
Exactly.
Very saucy ones. Also, like, you guys do all the cool stuff though, but you make us care about what's happening on screen, which is a big thing also, because sometimes you can get the weird stuff but then you don't give a shit about it because you didn't make us care about the characters at all. You guys did the opposite of that. Like, when the weird stuff's happening, like, you're truly invested in the characters that are on screen. There was a movie that came out, I want to say it was like 2 or 3 years ago, and like, I did a review on it and I felt bad because it was the movie Lamb, which like it. I love the movie after a rewatch, but when I watched it the first time, I had the weirdest critique at the end of it because I was like, guys, somebody fucked a sheep in this movie and I should care who it is that fucked the sheep. And it was so boring that I didn't care. Like, and I was like, if that ever happens in a movie, that's the first thing I should care about, is who fucked that sheep. Like, okay? And then I rewatched the movie. I was like, oh no, I was just watching this movie in a bad mood or something, because there's all sorts of cool stuff happening here. And now I love the movie. Okay, but
I got to tell a true story about where you're at right now, where we're all at. Me and my older daughter were driving to her, what was she, in eighth grade at the time? About eighth grade. I'm driving her to school, seventh grade. And she was in the back, so I could see her in the rearview mirror. And she pipes up and says, Dad, do people ever have sex with animals? And I was like, and first of all, it's a really weird question, but our rule in our family is never make anybody embarrassed, or, you know, you
sure.
Like, and so I was like, well, and at that time there was an article about an animal sex farm where a man had been killed by a horse.
Mm-hmm.
I said to her, I was like, you know what, I mean, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, Lulu, but actually sometimes some people have problems, and yes, they do. And recently a man was killed having sex with a horse. And I looked at her in the rearview mirror and her face just like changed. And I was, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't have told her the truth. And she says, what kind of horse would do that?
Well, I was gonna say, kind of like what you were talking about, Jonas, there's did any of you see the movie The Death of Dick Long? It's a movie, and that's about people who are doing like things they shouldn't be doing, but you're challenged to love them, you know?
Sure.
And so I love that about, like, in what you guys are all talking about. I love characters who you're challenged to love them or hate them. You know, the complexity is, and that's something that's really important to us.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, like, I would love to make a horror movie about a serial killer that you loved. That's so hard. Not in a sick way, but like serial killing or you know, killers are, you know, obviously that's terrible. But if you could make a movie that the audience felt so conflicted because they kind of were like, oh my God, I'm siding with this person too much. Like, that would be a great horror movie, because you're doing exactly what you're talking about.
I actually am working on a something along those lines. So yeah, it's because all of that is really it's especially like if you use like a serial killer for like a metaphor for like for alcoholism or other compulsory behaviors, or so you know what I mean. So if you're using it for that, you're trying to show them as like I'm a human being with a problem. You know what I mean? 100%. And right, yeah. And you can make them. Because even as terrible as like the later Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies are, they've actually done a good job of making Leatherface is more of a tragic figure,
humanizing him.
He's like, you know, he's been manipulated by you know, he's not smart, and he's a vulnerable person himself, and they've used him as a like weapon, and you know,
he's
and,
bullied in his own family.
Yeah, and yeah, so yeah. Like so he becomes this monster because of it. Yeah, I think all of the, you know, like the second you're going down that route, like you're already like miles ahead of so much, you know what I mean? Like the second you're like, you know, let's make this like a real like what does the world look like for, because like if you take Hell, you know, if you take Hellbender and you flip it around and it's just like people who are like going missing in the woods, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it looks very different. It's like there's probably a family still in Egypt somewhere who's like, my uncle was killed by an American archaeologist, you know what I mean, in the streets. Which, you know what I mean? Like, it just depends on the perspective, you know. So it's in Hellbender, it's great because like the family is, you know, you're seeing it from the sides of the people who are struggling with the reality of it, not from the side of like these people who are dying. And pro murder, you know what I mean?
Speaking of
recent movie that did that really well is one that Toby and I both really like. Did you guys see Megalomaniac yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because it was basically rapist versus serial killers.
But what was weird was it starts out and you're like, oh no, it's like, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can deal with like this kind of movie. And then suddenly the woman is psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
And so like you start out being like, I don't know if I can deal. Well, at least me, I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this movie, but I did.
100%.
And then suddenly when they turned it on its head, I was like, oh my God. Okay. Now we're doing what we're talking about, which is suddenly I'm like, oh, okay. So now I can see why this woman's so twisted and why she's doing what she's doing. You know? So
yeah, that's
really good filmmaking.
I love that movie. Yeah.
I think that's also like a part of the, a part of like the rape revenge genre is like you, when it's done well, like it's one of those things where like when you see the killings that are happening from the person who is victimized and right. the killings that they're doing, like they when it's done right, the more brutal those killings are, the happier you are, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, now I'm really rooting for her, like, you know, like yeah, like let's go. And it's kind of hard to do that with something that's like a slasher. You know, doing right. it with slash, they toyed around with that like a little bit with like Nightmare on Elm Street. I feel like they kind of toyed with it at first, where they were just like, was he a bad guy? Was he not a bad guy? And then they were like, ah, fuck it. No, he was a bad guy. Like, you know, but like they kind of toyed with it at first. Yeah. So I just, okay. I love what you guys do with your characters. It's you guys do it very well.
Thank you.
For sure. And it's got to be tough. I before we go on to Hellbender, because I have a few questions about that stunning movie. But was John, was that the first time you killed your own daughter on screen?
Because
that's a crazy scene.
Yes.
That is a heavy fucking scene.
Yes. Super duper brutal. If Zelda and I weren't laughing so much when we were doing it, I think it would have affected me more. Like now looking back, like the other day I was thinking about that scene and how probably it might have struck other people.
And
now that there's some separation to it, I'm like, oh geez, like we kind of got super dark. Like,
well, I had a really hard time with the bath scene in the DVD.
Toby wanted it edited. She was like, we have,
I don't
actually
wonder if we're going too far. And then John and Zelda were like, no, let's go further.
Yeah. Toby was like, this is too much and it's too brutal and you were killing this kid. And then Zelda was like, I think we need to go film more. So Zelda and I, because of that, went back to the bathtub, set it up and killed her some more, you know? And it was just like, that was the first time.
Because I came to realize, well, you have to kind of really like earn that violence. You know, I'm all about like, you really have to earn that hyper violence.
Sure.
And I feel like it took me a minute to just to get past my motherhood, you know, and just and realize and know that this isn't just like a glorified like we're like killing a, you know, a man killing a teenage girl. I was like, because a lot of times that trope is just really dead, you know.
Sure.
So in the end, I think this story did really need to get to where it was going, you know, and for her to kind of find her revenge. But it was really hard.
And it needed it for two reasons too. We also needed it to show the depth of his guilt. Like, you can't just like make a reference to him killing her and then explore his guilt. I mean, because this is the deep you digs just as much about guilt as it is about spiritual vengeance and spiritual recovery and stuff like that. It's very much about, is he going crazy? Is his guilt getting the best of him? Is he losing his soul to this girl that he took? Do you know what I mean? Isn't it
a
change of souls? So I'm glad that we had that, you know, awful scene.
It was sure.
No, I am too. But
and you know, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about working with your with kids in general. My daughter was into SFX makeup for a long time, and she's a little out of it now, but it was really into cosplay and stuff like that. And she's a huge Twin Peaks fan, and one year for Twin Peaks Day, we were doing she was doing like a Laura Palmer makeup, and she pretty good at it. And she painted herself. Are you guys seen the picture? The Laura Marilyn doing the Laura Palmer. She paints her face up and wraps herself in plastic. And I'm taking pictures of it for her. And at one point I had to stop, because she actually like looks like, you know, it's all fun and games until you're like, oh, she actually looks kind of dead. And like, you know what I mean? Like, and like, you know, this is like my, not only my child, but like somebody I'm incredibly close to, and somebody like, you know what I mean? Like my human, and like the person that I'm supposed to be protecting. And I'm like going through this. So, you know, beyond like that aspect of those things, you know, of that, like beyond that aspect, how like working with the family, was it, cause also that same human that looked dead, I also taught the skateboard, which had its fun moments, you know. So how was the cycle of parenting mixed with working, mixed with acting and reshooting, and sometimes being like, I have to be, am I dad, am I the director, that's got to be an interesting juggle.
You know what, it's a great question. And over the years, since we've been doing it now, what, 14 years together, we've kind of really learned how to dance together in a very like smooth, democratic way. And it's also incredibly convenient. It's really fun. And the truth is, we've grown up as filmmakers together, you know, adults and kids. And now our kids are young adults. Zelda's 20, who's 25, and they were 6 and 11 when they started.
Right.
So it's like to share, to kind of create together as a family is like, it's just the greatest gift in the world. Not to be corny, but it really is, because you're making a film together, you're working hard. And then, but then when you achieve that, and then you celebrate it by going to festivals, by watching it on screen, it's always there forever. It's just a tremendous joy.
I think it was also important to us, like we were saying before, we're very open and honest with our kids about our histories and real life and things like that, where we pretty much like to tell them the truth, you know?
Sure.
And when we started making movies, you know, the question was always, do you want to do this? And the first movie that we did, the answer was like, yeah, I want to be an actress and I want to learn how to be a director. And woohoo, we all jumped into this RV and off we went. Well, that was an experience where everybody learned, well, what do they like about it? What didn't they like about it? And our younger daughter really fell in love with it. Our older daughter, Lulu, the next movie, when it was like, do you guys want to make another movie? Zelda was like, yeah, I got it. Let's make a movie, you know? And Lulu was like, I don't know, I want to play soccer. And it was like,
yeah.
Then that was the end of the conversation. It wasn't like, well, we could really, you know, and so it's great, because every single movie that comes up, we always say to both the girls, who wants to do what, how much time do you have? And Like even with Hellbender, or no, with The Deeper You Dig, Zelda was like, I want to make a movie, but I really want to play a lot of soccer. So I only want to work like when it's convenient. And so you, if you watch The Deeper You Dig, you can see how much she actually is in it. And yeah, that's when she would wake up and be like, let's do that scene that we're waiting to do. Do you know what I mean? Because all the other times she was with her friends or she was, we were doing soccer or whatever. And I think that that's, everyone loves to ask us, do you guys fight a lot? And the answer is no, we never fight. And I think that that's the reason. Because we just ask the girls, what do you want to do? And if they say, if they ever say, I don't want to do anything today or I don't want to do anything at all, it, that's the end of the conversation. It's over.
Sure. And that's awesome.
When I first found out you were a family, I was like, do they have fun like around the dinner table, or is it like Toby being like, all right, give me a fucking era that we can shoot in. All right, Zelda, like, what are you, like, you're the director this time. Like I didn't know if like it was like all like brainstorming section or something like that.
That is what it is.
Graham, definitely at the dinner table. We always call like meals and walks or being in the car, those are all our office places. Yeah. Because that's where we have like great meetings. Like literally when we're eating, we're talking and coming up with great ideas. We always say it must be so funny being at a restaurant overhearing what talking about. Because we'll be like, well, after, are we going to do that after we cut off your head? Or like,
and then we'll cover it in
blood.
I want to
cut your head off with a saw, not an axe. Could we do it with a saw? Well, cutting my head off with a saw is we got to grind through the neck bone. And, you know, someone sitting next to me like, what the fuck is wrong?
And speaking of sawing through the neck bone, I want to give a shout out to Trey. I can't remember his last name. But yeah, his he does the special effects, I think, on all three, and he's just awesome. Like, and you can see them getting better, and too, like, it's fucking rad. So
we'll tell him you said that, because I call him like the maestro, because he's just like, he's a magician and an alchemist, and he's also the nicest fucking guy in the world. He's a total yes man. Like for Hellbender, we at one point wanted to have the jaws kind of unhinged like a snake and drop to the floor, like wide enough for a human to like walk into them, you know? And he's like, okay.
Right. He'll be like, yeah, I can do that. And then a little later, you're like, could he really do that? But, you know, Trey's the best art partner in the world, because he will try anything. Like Toby says, he always says yes. And he is a beautiful human being. And he's a horror aficionado.
He knows everything.
And without Trey, we wouldn't be where we are. Then that's a fact. Because actually with Hellbender, we had made the movie The Hatred. And the hardest thing was the effects. You know, I was trying to do things. And I could see, I was like, this takes an artist. And we found Trey, everything changed. And it's really a nice compliment that you say that he's improving with each movie, because we all read our reviews. We all do pay attention to the comments and the criticisms, and we pay attention to them and he pays attention to them. And we all do try to up our game with every movie. Like if there's criticism that we know is true, we're like, okay, we got to do that better, you know what I mean? And he's so cool about that. He never rests on his laurels, or he's never done.
That's so cool.
I was just reading some reviews of Hellbender, and I like they're all pretty good, but everyone's like 6 or 7, and I'm like, god, this movie's like so deleted. Like, I don't know, like I'm a lover of movies, and sometimes I think everybody just thinks they're like been like tasked with like being
judging
and like, and we're even like technically critics. Like they don't like to believe it, but we are technically, and I'm just like, everything, like unless it's like really sloppy or really silly or really like, or just bad, you know what I mean? Like it's going to take a lot
low effort
to go on and be like, even like there are movies I don't like that I would just never mention that I didn't like, because there's just like, either it's made by somebody small and it doesn't need to be panned. Like, you know what? Like, making movies is hard. Sometimes your second and third act are going to drag. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm picking it apart, like at that level, it's like, maybe I should be watching something different. You know, they've made 100,000 Marvel movies. No offense to the Marvel movies, but like, they have movies for people who want things like, so that, you know, like the, you know, edited and cut by a bazillion people and all that sort of stuff, you know. So to see the, and just knowing the work after interviewing so many people who make independent movies, just knowing what goes into all of this, like I read these reviews and I'm like, hey everybody, why don't you just you know, like when I was a kid, we had like, I went to the video store and we had The Stuff and we had Texas Chainsaw Massacre and we had Evil Dead and we had, you know what I mean? Like, and that was it. And now we have like this plethora of movies. So let's just all sit back and like, just love the Adams and Bozer can get together and make a rad movie. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's my little sidebar.
No, the review question is a good one. You know, it can sting really fucking hard when you read something. It stings the most when you feel that they're right. You know?
Oh, yeah.
If they hit an honest nerve where you're like, fuck, ah, damn it, that hurts. You know what I mean? Right. But the other thing that, okay, so these days, writing mean things is kind of the, like, it's very popular to do. So it doesn't matter whether it's rock and roll, punk rock, theater, movies, or politics. People love to just be like super mean. It's kind of like something that right now is part of our culture. But I find that maybe one of the good things about that is, like, I grew up on punk rock. Mm-hmm. Nobody in my high school liked punk rock. They liked Journey. They liked Asia. They liked Yes. I like the Minutemen.
Right.
Yes.
When I played the Minutemen for somebody, they would be like, that's the worst fucking music ever. It's so badly recorded and it sucks. Right.
Yeah. Fucking best.
So that's to me what those terrible reviews do for us is, it's like, I want to be the Minutemen. I don't want to be Asia. So if I can be the Minutemen, if I can get, you know, some super mean 50 really mean reviews, it's like,
means you're doing something right.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, just Mike Watt could play bass better than anybody in any of those bands. So that's a little bit of a deep cut there. Go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, the thing also with reviews is like the thing that Ryan brought up, that like, because we are technically movie critics, and I've also had to learn over the years, because I've actually done like full-blown review write-ups for just a lot of different things. But there was a movie that came out really recently that kind of made me face my own bullshit, and it was the movie Imaginary that came out from Blumhouse. Because I watched it and I hated it, like, I truly disliked it. And when I watched it, I wrote up a thing about it. And when I say that I shit on this movie, like, it was one of my worst things that I've reviewed. And then I watched it again and I was like, fuck me, this movie isn't for me. This is gateway horror for children. That's what this is. Yeah, so. And then when I rewatched it with that kind of like a mind frame, like as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, fuck, this actually isn't a bad movie. Like, this is because of what that movie is, because it is a gateway movie for children. That's kind of like going to let them like tiptoe into horror. I was like, fuck, this is actually a pretty solid movie for that, like for what it is. So when I watched it the first time, I was going into it as like, you know, an adult horror fan and blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, fuck this movie. And then that second time I watched it, I was like, all right, Jonas, you're kind of an asshole. This movie is like really actually not for you. Like, so it's kind of one of those things. Yeah, like you live and you learn. And I think when you are an independent filmmaker, you know, the fact that you guys actually look at that stuff and take those like kind of thought like things out of it, man, I wish more filmmakers were like that. Honestly, where they could look at it and they could look at those things and see that, like, you know, sometimes the criticisms are right and stuff like that. But you guys have a really, really good mindset about it. So it's just awesome that you guys do that.
Well, and it's I don't know, to be honest, it'd be hard to pick apart anything unless you're really trying in a lot of your movies. But anyway, I want to move on to Hellbender real quick. Was the key symbol, you know, the hand key symbol, the same as the one from The Deeper You Dig with the blood? It was very similar. I can't remember, actually, but no.
Apparently. No, because the one with the in The Deep You Dig was representative of the seven circles, which are the seven stages of grief. And so we wanted to use that as a metaphor. Like, she had to go through seven different worlds to get to the place of peace. And so, no, but great thinking, because symbolism is so important to us. You know, like the seven circles were super important to us, and the symbol of the Hellbender was very important. We thought a lot about it. And so,
you guys designed those and everything yourselves?
Yeah.
So rad. So rad. And that's what I wanted to get into with the music of Hellbender, which the album and the movie coming out together, just Jesus, that album is so fucking good. Pure fucking witch rock. Not just because it comes from a movie basically about witches, but more so like it's just got that feeling. And I think it's you and Zelda, Toby?
It's me and Zelda.
You too?
Oh yeah, and you mean singing?
Well, just doing, like, what are you guys playing?
Oh, well, John really plays all the instruments. I only learned the bass for the scenes, playing them so I could get the hand. Mm. But really, John's our musician. Zelda does play drums. Yeah, she does play
awesome.
Drums. John tends to like write great music for us, for the girls, like for our voices and what our voices naturally can do. He's really kind of got intuitive.
Yeah, it's tuned in, and it plays out through all the and especially I love it in the music in Where the Devil Roams. But album, it just and for anybody out there looking, it's super cool. It's all the E's are sixes, so it's 666, fucking rad. it's just a really, really great album, and it's such a cool fucking soundtrack. And the fact that you guys literally just do everything. And that movie, especially with the album together, was just a mind-blowing piece of art that you guys did.
That was so fun to do, you know, with the girls. That was, you know, getting Toby and Zelda together, because Zelda and I had been in, we played live together. She played drums and I would play guitar and sing, and we did a bunch of shows. But Toby came along and was like, hey, could I sing with you guys? And we were like, yeah. And that changed a lot of our sound, because Toby's really great at harmonies, and it adds this kind of super ethereal witchy element, and then distorted kind of, I don't even know what it is, but it's it just seemed to work. But very nice compliment, and thanks for saying it.
And you know, Graham, Hellbender the movie was born out of a music video we were shooting for the band Hellbender. Like we were shooting music video of the song
Dark
Sky or Black Sky.
Black Sky, yeah.
And we were like, oh my God, this is just so witchy. Like it had these really witchy themes, and John was discovering some cool things with editing, like that were sort of fuck ups, but that were like gifts. You know, it's great when your fuck up is like a gift. And and we were like, wait, maybe we need to really explore what this concept of Hellbender is. Like, what does that mean? And so that video really turned into the feature.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And yeah, just you and Zelda together are unmatched in that movie. Like, it's so fucking cool to watch you two play off of each other, and that ending scene is just brutal and heartbreaking and awesome all at the same time. Like, just wonderful.
She's a pleasure to work with, and it was so much fun having Lulu, you know, come and bring her energy to Amber, which is like, you know, like I always say, like Zelda's moonlight and Lulu's like sunlight, and that movie, they really are like moon and sun, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
And it was great to have Lulu's energy.
And that was an example of asking Lulu, like, hey, do you want to be in this movie? And she was living out in Portland at the time, and we were in upstate New York. And she was like, yeah, I want to be in the movie. And so we drove out to film with Lulu, because she was like, I want to be in the movie. So we went and drove out to Portland and killed her.
That's great. That's so rad.
So Toby, when you're writing, like speaking of writing for this, you know, like, and each kid's having different energy, as a script writer, do you find it easier to write? I always wonder this when you're writing for people that you know so well. Is it easier to write for somebody like your kids, where you're like, okay, this is what they'll be good at, and this is what's a good representation? Or do you find it harder to like, do you find it more limiting, or like, how does that work? You're like, okay, I'm writing a part that's for this person who I have this incredibly close relationship with, so I know what's going to be good for them. Do you want to challenge them? How does that process go? That's a
great question. Well, you know, first of all, we tend not to have fully written scripts. You know, right. Like John's a great writer. Zelda has great ideas. Lulu just wrote something that's coming out. But I personally think it's easier to write for someone I know. Like, I really do. Would you agree? I like particularly for Lulu, like playing Amber, she was really much easier to know, like, oh, we know what Amber's about. She's this kind of rock and roll punk kid, and that's what Lulu is.
Sure. Okay. It makes sense.
I think you do write. Toby is the writer in the bunch. You know, Toby's the writer. And she is very good at bringing out, I think, the best that each of us can do. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Like,
me too. Toby's very good at not necessarily writing my dialogue, but telling me how to get it out in a place that's genuine. Does that
sure.
make sense?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's good. That's actually like what John said. John's really good with dialogue, and often everybody knows what would sound best coming out of their mouths. So usually what we'll do is we'll have kind of a template, and then we'll kind of jump off from that when we're shooting. And sometimes we scrap the whole thing because it's just not working, and we discover it as we're shooting it. Because luckily we have the luxury of doing that since we can reshoot it if it's just us.
Sure.
You know? Well, a good example is the last scene in the movie. Do you like the last scene in the movie of Hellbender, where, you know, you finally see that, no, this girl is going to go full Hellbender. She is not going to be a human. She's going to go full Hellbender. And the mom has to deal with it. And the mom also knows that her numbers are up. And, you know, it was fun because I remember when Zelda first started acting, she was like, I don't feel like I'm doing this right. And I was like, yeah, Zelda, you're not nice Zelda anymore. Now you are fucking mean Zelda, you know? And she was like, ah, okay, I'm gonna be mean Zelda now. And it was great because she's great mean Zelda, you know?
Yeah. Terrifying.
What else do you want to talk about with Hellbender, Graham? Because I know that you're chomping at the bit for all the Hellbender information. You know what I mean? Because we've only been talking about Hellbender nonstop the entire time we've been doing this podcast.
That's not true. We talked about other things. Yeah. Well, Where the Devil Roams is the new one. And I pre-ordered a copy of it here and got it. And it's fucking, it's wonderful. I as soon as I saw it, first of all, it came out on Tubi, which surprised and delighted me. Because before that, I watch a lot of virtual film festivals, and a lot of them get picked up, and I see, you know, sometimes later on Shudder or some, you know, somewhere, but Screenbox and stuff. But Tubi wasn't really known for its new stuff. And I saw like Tubi originals, and I looked at a few and I was like, I don't know. But then, you know, there were some movies that I saw at the festivals drop on there that I had really loved. And I was like, oh, Tubi's getting in the game. I like this now. And like Sorry Charlie was up there, and Black Mold was really great. And so when your guys was announced on Tubi, I was like, this is fucking awesome. A for Tubi and B for them, because now people are going to be able to see this, you know, much easier than Hellbender. And it's, for those that haven't seen it, please go see it. I don't want to spoil anything in this one, but it's carnival horror, which is so fucking cool. Mm-hmm. It takes place, I think, in the 30s or so, Depression era. And it's just, it's got like Toby Hooper, Poe, Lovecraft, and a lot of Todd Browning aspects to it. And it's just fucking rad. So how did that come about? Because you've now gone from like guilt and witchcraft or supernatural stuff, and then straight up witches, and each movie had a different feel. And this one has the most, I think, exciting and progressive. So, but like you expanded a lot and took a lot more chances and it paid off in dividends. But how did that come about?
I mean, the quick answer, it came about because Zelda was taking, she wanted to do photos where she was Bonnie and Clyde. And so we needed to composite her as we had to set the camera up on a tripod, take pictures of her as Bonnie. Mm-hmm. And then she went and painted a mustache on, got a rifle and walked back out just as Clyde. And then we composited the two pictures together and we shot them in front of my dad's 31 Chevy. And when we looked at the pictures and turned them black and white and looked at her as Bonnie and Clyde, we were like, we got to make a movie like this. And that's the short answer of how it really like jumped into high gear.
And while we were on the festival tour for Hellbender, we were stopping by all these like vintage shops and thrift stores, just accumulating. When we came back, our car was packed to the hilt. You know, with
love this,
and we were ready to start rolling, you know.
Yeah, filmed like every Midwest town we drove through, we grabbed B-roll to composite the towns together. Yes. And to, so it was like we just like started shooting like immediately, and just it was the most enjoyable movie we've ever put together because it just unfolded in front of us in this really beautiful way. And I would just throw out one last thing about why I think it came together. I think you have other ideas about why it came together, but we had gone down the black and white rabbit hole. So we had watched, we were getting into Vampyr and we were getting into Nosferatu and Frankenstein and even Bonnie and Clyde, you know, with Warren Beatty, even though it's later. But we were getting into these black and white movies and we had talked a lot about, oh, it'd be so fun to do black and white, you know, but it's so... The only place that you can do it is horror. And so we were lucky.
Yeah, it's and it's affected because I like the question I was going to ask you about it is doing a period piece harder because it's like more expensive getting all the stuff together to, but like y'all are like smart. You're like, we'll just
Who has ever said that before? So. Right. Recording. Is this being recorded?
Right. It's on the record.
But for real, because you know, because I would think that like you bring like a like I mean like the at least like in the other ones you could kind of just like wear your clothes, right? You know what I mean? Or like you know what I mean? Like just go down to the store and find things that worked or whatever. But like trying to get an entire period piece set together and doing all those things is really challenging. So to be able to find that stuff and to do that and to have that foresight, like, okay, we're gonna tour around with this movie and we're gonna start building towards the next one, is just like what makes independent horror and like y'all's operation like so perfect. And it's why, and it really shows in the final product. So oh, you know what I mean, you know, so
yeah, that was fun and it was difficult, and we knew it was going to be difficult, but one thing we knew that we had was time. So I think the hardest part about putting Where the Devil Roams together was there was a lot of compositing, and so you had to kind of remember how hard sometimes it would be, like we'd film like the magician guy who cuts off his fingers on a stage with just a green screen behind him. We build the stage, but then we'd have to remember, you know, we need to get the clouds, we need to get the trees, and we need to get a tent to put behind him eventually. So,
right.
So that it looks real. So I think that was the hardest part, but luckily we had time.
And we had Trey.
Trey
was at just like, he painted in backgrounds that we never could have afforded to, you know, go rent a Ferris wheel or something. You know, I mean, his artistry was just, you know, formidable, and I'm so grateful to what he did for us.
And he got into something that he wanted to explore was what he, you know, he's a big Star Wars fan. And so he wanted to film miniatures like they do in Star Wars.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So he started building models. Like he built a model World War One tank. And it looks, I watch it and I know it's fake and I can't see.
Yeah, I would have had no idea that was happening in that movie. Yeah, that's a I mean, I didn't
That's
know.
So cool.
I mean, yeah. I just thought you all had Ferris wheel and tank money. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, right.
We're loaded.
Yeah. So, Ferris wheel and tank money.
But it was fun because, you know, that's his art and that's his fun. And so he put those things together. He built those miniatures and he worked really hard on them.
And, you know, all the carnival stuff, like John and Lulu would be out there building these sets and then, you know, in our field. And it's sometimes it's kind of like a beautiful gift when you don't have a big budget because you're forced to be, you know, to use ingenuity, you know, you're forced to be creative. And John would just kind of recycle all that wood. He'd tear it down. He'd build up another little carnival set and just shoot it at a different angle.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard, hard fucking work, but if you're just committed to it and you believe in it and, you know, that's your set. And for us, it was almost more about the backstage. Then it's going to work. Knock on wood.
And our neighbors were like, what the hell are you guys doing?
You know, everything. I love that. All your neighbors must be like, this family.
Yeah. Now they're actually like, we've had the fire department come up. One time the fire department came because they thought there was a dead body in our field. And we were shooting at the time. And so we were kind of like, no, we're shooting. Like, don't step on the snow because we don't want your traps in it. And, you know, the fire department's like, no, we really got to check on this person. It's like, it's a fake person. They're getting used to it now. Now, like, 911 doesn't come anymore.
That's okay. That's too bad because at least it would be interesting. You know what I mean? At least it lets excitement. You could probably
these days they'll just show up and be like, "Ah, we fucked up. We should have showed up on that one. That was a real day."
Also, the music in that movie gives it like almost an exploitation. Like when everybody's walking and the music just starts going, like that shit is so cool. And I also read in the booklet that comes with this. I was reading, it talks a lot about like the history of the carnival and during Depression era and stuff. And it said something which I thought was kind of cool and kind of revealing, but it said carnivals were usually attended by people in lower income brackets. And it made me think, like, if I was rich, I would want to go to all these like crazy, weird things that I guess other rich, like what? So it says like money make people not appreciate art or like.
Well, you know, when we looked up, when we were like, okay, we want to make a movie about 1930s carnival. Well, let's look up pictures and just see exactly what we're getting ourselves into. Because what's the movie with Guillermo del Toro? With
Nightmare Alley.
Nightmare Alley. Mm-hmm. Because we had seen we had seen like some pre-pictures of Nightmare Alley. And we were like, oh, my God, we can never do anything like that. So let's see like what they really looked like. And when you look up pictures of 1930s county fairs or 1930s carnivals, they're so primitive. They're muddy. The signs are hand painted and very primitively, you know, it's like it's built by like 2x4s and rotten wood. And so we were like, oh, well, we can do that. You know, like we can do that. Like this is right up our alley. And I think that we also based it on the county fair that plays right next to us. That's still like, you know, it's got crash 'em up derbies and, you know, burnt hot dogs and it's got a vibe to it. To answer your question about rich people, I would say around here, there's not so many rich people. And I don't think there's ever
been a lot of artists.
Yeah. but like, you know, when you look at the, like that stuff was dangerous. Like there was a danger to it. And that's what's so
cool
about making a movie about it. It's like with danger, there also felt like there's a magic to it. Do you know what I mean? Like the magician that's doing things, there's something dark about it, you know? And that's what's so romantic about making a movie about that era.
Absolutely. And I think that like probably rich people were into going to more dignified things than, you know, like carnivals and stuff like that. I mean, you don't see like, I mean, like, you know, you don't see rich people at like a monster truck event or you don't see a lot of rich people at
the drivers.
You know what I mean?
That's
like,
true. Yeah.
Actually, I was looking it up the other day. I was like, can I become a monster truck driver? Because I've, you know, I mean, like, what a cool job. I mean, like, but like for a lot, unless you are driving like one of the main ones, you're making about 65 a year. even on the Monster Jam circuit. You know what I mean? Like 65 is not like bad money, but like it's not like entertainment money. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like
yeah. $300,000 truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right.
Now at a $230,000 loss.
Exactly. Exactly.
Also, I think there's like a big difference between like state fair carnivals, which are like actually kind of dope. Those are fun because like there's real people there, and like there's kind of some like romanticism to the danger that's at those things too. Like those rides are rickety, like, you know, they're freaky. They're like, you know what I mean? Like they are. And then there's rich people amusement parks like fucking Disney World where you have to pay $15 for like a soda, you know, and right. stuff like that. Like, so there's, I feel like there's definitely different things now, but in the 30s, yeah, like everything I've seen it. Like, have you ever seen the movie that was kind of like the lost Romero movie called The Amusement Park?
Yeah, I really liked that film.
It's yeah, great. Beautiful film, black and white, had that like really old feel to it and stuff like that. And I think so, like what you guys did with your movie, I think you guys hit it pitch perfect on what you guys did.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And the way you played off Toby, the way you played off your past trauma was unparalleled in that. Like, because you could just feel it. And blindfolding John during like the bloody parts and stuff was such a genius move. I thought when he's knocking your teeth out or your tooth, Jesus, that part is rough for me.
I know, you know, it's funny. Oh, I was looking at I was gonna buy some of our Blu-rays, and I was looking at some reviews from the site, and someone had said, "Oh, they're just throwing in a bloody tooth scene just for gore." I'm like, "No, like funny as hell." I mean, that's why, going back to the character thing, that's why we wanted to make these characters complex things, and it's always important to give conflict. You know, like for instance, Seven's got his trauma, but like, what kind of, I think it's so beautiful that two people can be in love with each other. One of them is totally compelled to like shed blood and the other one can't see it, you know?
Can't even look at it.
Good fucking conflict, you know?
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. I miss Maggie every day. I really do. I loved playing her so much.
Also, whoever wrote that review, we need to get their address and send them this picture.
Send them that shit.
Because that's what it's about. Like, that scene is so important to us because it's about poverty and it's about pain. And with poverty comes a ton of pain because that's actually based on a carpenter that I was working with. We were building a house and his tooth went rotten and he was in so much pain and he was a big, strong, ass-kicking man. And he came to work and he just got drunk because he was in so much pain. And I was like, why don't you go to the dentist? And he's like, I can't afford a fucking dentist, you know? So I'm going to drink it until it's totally dead. I'm going to drink until my tooth is dead. And that's what that scene's about. It's about pain and poverty.
Wow. Really
heavy. Yeah, great. No, seriously. Awesome. That makes it
even better.
Yeah, as a having a carpenter father myself, I know the.
I was gonna ask about the rough, clumpy clown makeup next, but I think I'll skip it. That was fucking rad.
Here's something also funny about that. I said to the guy, his name was Tom. I said, for the rest of the day, I'm gonna call you the Tooth Fairy, and he said, try it. So I went to work.
Awesome. You guys are great. We could literally talk to you probably for
hours
about like literally all of these movies and things like that. And we thank you so much for your for the work that you're doing and the art that you're bringing out and your dedication to it and working with your family and doing all the things that like, you know, like the good stuff. Like it's good. And you're giving us great horror in the mix. And so that's we couldn't be more
huge fans.
Yeah. Couldn't be more excited to have you on here, but to be you know, witnessing it firsthand as it's coming out. And so do you think that you can, but with all of this talk, do you think you can handle our Sinister Six questions?
Yeah,
okay, let's
all right, we'll start with Toby.
Bring it.
Michael Myers or Leatherface?
Leatherface.
Dope.
Awesome. Yep. Yeah. Is Bigfoot real?
No.
Oh, John, is Bigfoot real?
Is Bigfoot real? Sasquatch is.
Okay. Oh, I like that answer. Yeah,
that's good. And my, you pick Leatherface too?
Oh, without a doubt, of course.
Dead. All right, we'll start with you. What movie would you remake?
Oh, I know which. Are you asking me or Toby?
Yeah.
Me? The Omen.
Oh, shut. And you're going to say that. No, that's mine.
No,
too.
That's mine. You, it can both be. Yes.
Remake it together.
Definitely with a girl, and it's going to be The Omen.
Yeah. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Good. You guys so need good. To wash the taste out of everybody's mouth from the remake that they did do it.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, right. Okay. Well, I didn't go watch it because The Omen is like.
We watch it like once it's, or twice.
It's like the White Album. It's like, don't fuck with it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. It's
100%.
But you guys should actually.
But I'd like to fuck with it because we make it a girl, and then it's a.
Yeah.
Then, that's a good difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. Toby, if you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be horror.
Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Ooh. I love that you had an answer. Whoa.
he drew a sword.
I really like that writer. I like that director. I love all the actors in it. I couldn't wait to see that movie, and I was so fucking disappointed. That sounds so motherly. I'm disappointed in you.
No, I get it though. Like, I think that, you know, like we don't like my choice for this question is always like the Rob Zombie movies because they don't like them. But it's a, but the disappointment, like, I think Hannibal, the movie, was such a disappointment for me because it had such a great cast and had such everything like that. So like, I get that. Like when you have like for a movie to be bad, it has to have the formula, the recipe to be a good movie, in my opinion. And then like all of a sudden you're like, oh, and that movie you're talking about, yeah, it's like I couldn't, like people were like loved it, and I just like couldn't wait for it to be over. So yeah, I get it.
That's a great answer.
Mine is the movie where Tom Hanks runs across the country.
You're not
Ryan just mentioned that today.
You're not gonna believe this, but like that is like one of my legitimately Graham posted something on Facebook about what was it, like a movie that
what's your least favorite or most hated Oscar winner or nominee?
It's easily Forrest Gump. Like the moral of Forrest Gump is don't leave your simple lifestyle and go out as a woman because you're going to get beat by your liberal boyfriend. You're going to get hooked in on drugs, try to commit suicide, and then like die of AIDS. Like that's the moral of the movie. Like, whatever you do, don't go out there and don't hang out with leftists and don't do, because this is, it's a one shot to the grave. You know what I mean? And so like, anyways, so thank you. Thank you.
It's not a fucking box of chocolate.
did you do with
chocolate?
And you know what? My biggest thing, and I say this all the time, I even made a meme about it, the box of chocolates has a map on the top that says says what everything is and shows the shape. So like, she's so full of shit. Like you open the box and you know what it is. It literally tells you this is the. I mean, I think it should be life is like a box of chocolates, kind of mediocre. But that I think that's like looks
who
better.
Than... box of chocolates. Now is this Stouffer's chocolates?
right. Exactly.
What kind of chocolate is it?
Yeah, it's like
quality,
is this
all
a is this a Whitman sampler? You know what I mean? Like but she's so full of shit. There's a map on the top. Anyways,
if Forrest would have just opened up the thing of chocolates and been like, "Oh, that's the one where you give me AIDS at the end. I'm not going to eat that." Movie would be over.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I love it. So good. All right, fifth one, John, Alien or Aliens?
Oh, I love Alien. I absolutely love it. There's not much. It's just wonderful. So I like the next one too, but I got to say Alien, just exceptional.
Also, okay. I love them both too. So I'll say Aliens, just just to counterbalance you. I really
Well, let's watch them both tonight.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, I can go with both. I mean, like, I love the first one, but man, the second one is a good time, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's a good time, right?
Yeah.
With Vasquez, and it's all like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's good. They really made it. It's a great movie.
I just love the breakfast scene in Alien, though. See, you can't take
that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, like,
getting up and having breakfast in their underpants.
that's good living. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Great in space.
Exactly.
All right. Last one. Toby, basement or attic?
Oh, man. I'll go for the attic.
So nice. Fun. Yeah, basement's cold and brutal.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love that you.
Yeah,
they're very different. They're both provocative in their own yep. ways.
I agree.
But I love the gothic romance of an attic.
Well, now yeah. I gotta know, what are your guys' picks for basement or attic?
Mine's honestly recently. I think I came up with the question because I was like, basements are the normal, like sort of spooky. Where the dark things are, but like I had seen a few movies where the attic was like where some shit went down, and I was like, I think I kind of like the attic. Like, I think it's the V-shaped roof, you know, like that's a little like constricting, but also it can be like huge and gothic, like you said. Like,
there you go,
you get a little moonlight in there, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah,
shadows.
You see, that's more romantic horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
The attic is much more romantic horror. The basement's not romantic. It's very sad and painful.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
How about you guys? Wait, I gotta know.
Yeah, Adam. Yeah.
So I'm a smell guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I love a smell of like a linen closet when you open. There's just something like really great about that.
Basement
like,
stink.
I know, but that's what I like. I like the smell of a basement. Like I just like there's just something about that. Like, I mean, partially it's like, you know, my grandfather, my mother's father, you know, he's Hungarian and kind of a creep, and they
lived
had
in the basement.
They had just this house for a long time, and it just had like a basement, like a proper basement, you know, and like right. And it had stuff down there, and like it just like, you know, and you go down there and it would just be the, and this was right outside of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and it just smelled like I don't know, like it just had that like so
must.
Still to, yeah, exactly, that must. And so still to this day when I go into a basement, that's it. I love an attic too, like I love an attic, and don't get me wrong, and I think attics can be actually kind of gothic and creepy themselves, you know what I mean, like oh. You know what I mean, like I think that they have that. And I'm also like I hate rodents, and so I've in my experience rodents have been more populous in attics than they have in basements. Not that they don't live in basements, but man, an attic, like they go up a lot. And so every time I've gone into a crawl space or anything like that, so I'm gonna go basement. I love an attic too, but I also like if I'm walking down a basement steps. I don't care how light it is in there. I don't care if there's 500 people down there. I don't care if anything. If I'm walking down a basement step, there's something that's going to grab the back of my legs. You know what I mean? And like there's and like that visceral of a like something that can spark that visceral of an emotion is pretty good. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sticking my head when I first put my head into the attic,
yeah,
like that emotion is also a thing. You know what I mean? But like, but
it's that
yeah.
split second where you shit your pants,
and that's going to grab your head.
Like,
oh,
okay. Right. Like, what am I gonna see? What am I gonna see? Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, like anyways, I like both of them. Terror, different terror.
I like an attic more, and I'm more scared of a basement. So like if I'm in a house that has both of those things and I hear a noise in the attic, I'm like, it's probably like a raccoon or a critter or like a whatever. I'm cool with that. I'll go up and I'll make friends with that raccoon. I don't care. Like, that's fine. If I hear a noise in the basement, what the fuck is in my basement? Like, that's, there's no, and that's immediately where my brain goes is what is in my basement? I should not be able to hear a noise of something moving around in my basement. Like, I didn't have a burnout friend that's hanging out in the basement. There's no, if there is an animal down there, that's a big ass animal. Like, there's, just there's stuff in the basement that freaks me out more, but I think attics are gorgeous. I think a lot of attics.
That's why we call them, you know, rabies Jonas.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Making friends with the raccoons
closer to hell. I mean, come on.
True.
That's true.
But I like hell, though. Basement I do can like also hell.
Be,
shit.
Yeah, hell is a great place to be.
Yeah.
Hell ain't a bad place to be.
Right. Yeah. I'm a hell fan. Fuck.
Well, excellent job. Going so good. Through the Sinister Six. Recommendation time. Graham, what do you got?
Oh, all right. I've got a few movies here, so I'm just going to name a couple. But I saw a bunch of movies recently. Loved Late Night with the Devil. Loved Stop Motion, although I still don't really understand the ending. I loved
it to you and everything.
I know, but it wasn't great. I mean, I got the parts you explained. It was just whatever. It's really fucking cool and really beautiful to look at. I love stop motion shit, and it's balanced in the movie perfectly. So you're not like watching Mad God and expecting a movie. You're like watching a movie and getting like more cool shit. I don't know. And I just watched The Sect from, I think it's 90, produced by Argento. And that was fantastic. It's on Shudder. Check that out. For music, this one is specifically for the Hellbender crew. Witch Fever is my favorite witch band besides Hellbender. And they're from the UK. They are a lot heavier. And it's a lot about indoctrinated religion and escaping that and how dudes suck. And it's fucking right up my alley. It's really, really great. They have an album called Congregation. Check that out. And that's it for me. Jonas?
Yeah. Movie wise, also, I'll recommend Late Night with the Devil. It's coming out the 22nd, so it's going to be out all weekend. Definitely go see it. You'll Never Find Me. I just watched that too. Fucking rules. It's a slow burn. It's a super slow burn, but it's a really good payoff for the slow burn. That's going to be coming out pretty soon too. I think that's actually coming out on Shudder on the 22nd. It's really, yeah, but it's really good. Physical media wise, I revisited this movie, and the physical media release is great, and that is Censor.
Nice.
Yeah. The physical media release is from Vinegar Syndrome. And it's a great movie. Like I watched it the first time when I got the physical media, and it was like, it was cool. And then I rewatched it and I was like, oh, this is actually a really like kind of brilliant movie. So definitely check that out. If you're into physical media, it's a really good release. And then music wise, I just got into a British pop punk band called, Boston Manor. I've been listening through a lot of their stuff. They do a lot of different types of music, but they're really more like,
it's not pop punk. I don't know why these kids are calling it pop punk these days.
Well, I mean, their new stuff sounds like it, is what I'm saying, but their music is all over the place. But their new stuff sounds like more poppy punk type
music. That's the first band I bought. They were headlining and I bought tickets just to see the opening bands. That was one of the first times. It was Drug Church.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't know them or anything, but I knew Drug Church was on there. I was like, fuck Boston Manor.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
Yeah, and now I've been listening.
Listen.
I've been listening through their discography, and they're like, they do a lot of different types of stuff, but their newer stuff is more like on the pop punk side. But yeah, they're really good. And that's it. Ryan, what do you got?
Well, I mean, we're going to maybe we should do a whole episode on Late Night with the Devil, but watching the screener of Late Night with the Devil was one of the best things this year, and it's just absolutely fantastic, and I don't know what else to say about that, except that it's worthy of the hype, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a cool movie. I love it because it's a good, simple movie with not a bazillion characters and not a bazillion things. And they just sort of, Jess Malia is like absolutely fantastic in it, and he should be in everything. And I would suggest another goddamn horror, not another. Last podcast on the left is doing a series on David Icke, which is cool because it kind of gives If you want to see how like conspiracy theories have been built and are helping function our society and things like that, and where those originated from, and how silly a lot of it is, I think
he's definitely one of the fucking crazier ones.
Yeah, but it's like a straight shot from David Icke to like January 6th. You know what I mean? Like QAnon, the whole nine is a whole pipeline of that stuff, and it's really comes from this guy. And when you kind of look at his history and how it came about, you're like, oh, this is really silly. So and its prolificness. So it's a good series. They've only had one out. By the time this comes out, they'll be probably all out, but that would be my suggestion. I got light suggestions this week.
And they also just had David Dasmalchian on there too.
Yeah, they did. So go check out. I suggest a lot of Last Podcasts on the Left. They should be paying us. You know what I mean? Yeah. Toby, what do you got?
Oh, you know, I just saw a real oldie from 1933, maybe, called Babyface. Have you ever seen Barbara Stanwyck?
I haven't.
I'm going to mention that because, you know, just to kind of step out of the genre just slightly, because it was so beautifully shot and it was pretty damn like painful and beautiful story. So I mentioned that one. Horror. Let me see. Well, I just saw Saint Drogo from our buddies from Providence, Rhode Island area. You know, they got a lot of good filmmakers there, and Saint Drogo was really good. Awesome. And let me think of just something mainstream. Okay. I'm sure people by now have seen, was the Argentinian film, When Evil Lurks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, you've got to like watch that film, people. It's so good.
One of the best just films, I think, of last year. Yeah. Horror or not, just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
His ability is... Like his part in Satanic Hispanics is really good. He did Terrified, which is also really amazing. Like his just ability just for like visual, like atmospheric stuff is just on the money. So
And music, let me just mention this band out of Berlin called Aptera, four woman, like, you know, metal band that is so fucking Aptera.
Aptera. Awesome.
Yep.
Down with
amazing.
It. Amazing. So but I heavily recommend the band Slowmosa, and they've just come out with a song like in the last couple of months called Cabin Fever. And I think the album now is called Cabin Fever. They're exceptional. We listen to them all the time. They inspire us. So I'm just going to, that's musically, that's what I'm going to recommend. And it's hard because film wise, any minute I could recommend something else. But if people out there haven't seen a movie called The Innocents out of Norway or Sweden.
Oh, yeah.
A great movie. Yeah.
I have to say, if you haven't watched The Innocents, I heavily recommend it. I think it's a perfect movie.
Fantastic movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just is like when I watched it, I watched it with Zelda and Toby. And when it was over, I was like, well, that's my favorite movie. It's perfect.
Wow, that's
love that.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Norway? Yeah, I think it's Norwegian. I think it's Norway. I'm trying to look it up, but great movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a brilliant film.
It's kids acting, and they are flawless.
Yeah,
and the met.
And it's horrific.
It's,
you know?
it's awful and wonderful.
Love it. Well, you all have been some of the best guests we've had in a long time. And no disrespect to our other guests, but we've been really excited to have you on forever. And you know what I mean? And I mean, maybe now Graham can, quit talking about y'all for just about three or four days.
No, now I'm going to be talking to them, trying to get up there so they can kill me on screen.
I was just going to say, what you need to do is you need to come up to the Catskills and we need to chop you up.
I'll go up there right now, and then
we can talk after that. Then you can say, I know. Let me tell you about these characters.
I have like a week off from work. The weather's cool. I'm going up there.
Yeah, there you go. You're right in Brooklyn, right? Isn't that what I heard right in the beginning?
Yeah.
Me and Graham were both in Brooklyn. Both there.
I'm on the West Coast. So
we love the West Coast. We love where you are.
There's plenty of places to chop you up around Portland.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we chopped up Lulu outside of Portland in near Manzanita.
No, no kidding.
There you go.
That's perfect.
We're going to Crypticon next month.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, up in Seattle. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I'm always available to be killed. So
well, thank you. You guys are hugely generous to offer. Yeah.
Just offering up our bodies.
Yes.
And I may or may not have been recently casted. Oh, I shouldn't talk. I can't talk about that. Anyways, what a fantastic episode. Thank you all so much for joining us. And this is great. Thank you all so much for everybody worldwide coming in. United States still coming in strong. Let's see, what's the number one state that's watching us? New York. Oregon has come up. Oregon used to be like fifth, and which was bumming me out, but now we're second. California and Washington, Texas. We got a lot of Texas listeners. We know some of them, so that's a big we love our Texas our Austin folks. So United States, United Kingdom coming in really, really strong in second place, and we have been within the top 20 of your film interview podcast for the last 3 weeks, really strongly. So thank you so much, the UK for all your support. We love it. Please reach out to us if you have anything that you want us to talk about, or anybody, you know. I love that we have so many listeners in Wales. Please hit us up. Canada coming in fourth, New Zealand tight five, like coming right in after Canada, like right on the neck of it. Australia standing strong yet again. Really, we were we were running like eighth in film interview podcasts in Australia this past couple of weeks. So we really do appreciate you down there. Thank you both to New Zealand and Australia. You really have been so strong since the beginning. We love you. Germany and Sweden coming in next. Turks and Caicos Islands still in there. Followed by India and Mexico. And I would list more, but Graham hates other countries. So I
do love the Army of the Goddamn.
Yes, and who are they?
Our Patreon subscribers. We got Michael, Drew, Stephanie, Katie, Chris, Alan, Bacon Bits, Angela, Jasmine, Jason, Jake, Vivian, Ron, Kristen, Manny, Coleman, Ryan, Jared, Michelle, and Brandon. Thank you so much.
Y'all fucking roll.
Give it up for Adam Poser family movies. Go watch them all. They're
all of them.
Amazon. Listen to the record. Do the whole thing. This is
physical media.
This is what we want in this world. More of them, less of nearly everybody else. Thank you, everybody. If you are all struggling out there, please reach out to us. You know, we don't got all the answers, but you know what? We all need to do this together. So take care of yourself, please. We love you. Take care of yourself. You know, we're all here. We're all going to do this together. All horror fans got to stick together till the very end. Take care of yourself. And until we see you again, please start some fires and break some glass. Thank you.